Hey guys, and welcome back to another Dreams, Memes and Veggie Supremes. This is episode 4, and today we're going to be covering nutrition myths. So, obviously my forte, Jack's going to take a bit of a backseat. He took, obviously, the front seat in the last episode. If you haven't watched that already, that's Fitness Myths. Make sure you check it out. We had a really good conversation about some very popular fitness myths. So today, we've got V-Spot again for the pizza. As always, we're going to jump into the pizza first. So, Toby Maguire, please take it away.
Pizza time.
Jack, can you tell the people what we've got today?
Alright, so we have barbecue chicken.
Yeah, that's the barbecue chicken.
Barbecue chicken's there, and then this one is the supreme, I believe.
What do you want to start with, the supreme?
Barbecue chicken.
You want to start with the barbecue chicken? Mm-hmm. Alright, sweet. I'm just going to grab a massive slice there. Alright, let's do it. For the people out there who are still involved in the debate, this pizza has pineapple on it. But it works so well, I think. It works so well. I'm sorry, that's controversial.
Do you like pineapple on pizza?
Didn't you already do that?
Leave your answer in the iTunes 5-star reviews down below. Rating. This one's tough, I think.
I think I've made my decision. Can we do 0.5s?
8.5.
Yeah, legit. 8.5. I think we're going to jump into the veggie supremes. We're just spoiled for choice here. We've got so many ratings.
Too many pizzas.
I know. I'm rating it within what it can do.
Yep.
So it's a veggie supreme. I'm not rating it as a pizza. I'm rating it as a supreme pizza. Okay. You get what I mean?
Yep.
So for that sole fact, I'm giving it a 9.
Okay. I would give it, again, an 8.5. I think both of those are about the same as each other. Very good pizzas, but they're not the best that we've had, especially from these guys.
Yeah, the last two. Yeah, I think we might have to put V-Spot a bit further down the line now. We've had them 2 weeks in a row. So next time we'll be visiting somewhere else, perhaps a bit more local. So yeah, let's jump into the topic of nutrition myths.
Yep.
So this
we'll
is going to be fun.
We'll hop into it now.
These are mainly ones that I've encountered a lot. I would assume you did.
I've encountered a few, more so by proxy, I think.
But. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I was more referring to is the fitness myths you did last podcast. They were the ones that you encounter the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of doing the same as Jack in that regard. But yeah, you have with these nutrition myths. These are definitely ones that he experiences too. Not just me. I mean, you've seen the list. Again, we do planning for these podcasts just so we can be as eloquent and concise as possible. We hope that we do that. So you've looked through the list. Do you agree with a lot of these? Well, I guess the fact that they are myths, to some regard.
That's a very good question. I should probably look at the list before you say that.
Oh, you haven't seen the list?
No.
Oh, don't look.
I'm looking now.
This is real time.
I've just looked.
So you've looked at the list, so yes. in a certain regard, do you believe a lot of these are myths to some point?
Yeah, 100%.
And these are myths that you encounter as well, even with your
clients? Yeah, I've done. Yeah. Not so much with clients, I would say, with these myths, but more so just talking to people. These are ones that I have just spoken to people about.
So it's mainly general public, not your actual clients?
Yes, definitely.
That's good to know. It's good to know. Because I know a lot of people would confine in their personal trainer for nutrition advice.
Yeah.
And that's no problem. We can speak about nutrition and, we should be able to have a free exchange of ideas and all the rest. But just take it with a pinch of salt if you get it from a personal trainer. Sorry, Jack. And even take it from a pinch of salt if it's coming from someone like me or another dietitian. Always challenge these things and just know what you're getting is going to be evidence-based and is going to be put through that critical thinking kind of machine.
I think one of the things that links into that with health professionals especially is they seem somewhat scared to say, I don't know, when they are saying.
So true.
Such a good client point. Comes up and goes, I've heard that detoxes might help with my weight loss. And they'll go, yeah.
Yeah, double.
Rather than just go, I don't know about that. Yeah. Maybe I'll do some research and come back to it.
It's such a big, such a massive sign of someone's intelligence if they can admit if they don't know, or even better, if they can admit they were wrong.
Mm.
And that's something I do all the time.
Because you're wrong a lot.
Because I'm wrong a lot. Or I just don't know. I'll try and do it as much as I can and always try and challenge my own ideas as well and challenge the advice that I'm giving to people. I mostly work with people who are losing body fat and gaining weight, which is also gaining muscle, sorry, which is also known as body recomposition. And so my scope of practice is mainly around that. Mm. I don't deal with chronic disease, so when people do ask me about chronic disease,
yeah,
I put my hand up and say, look, I know a bit about it, I don't know a lot, I don't know the most, and I wouldn't feel comfortable giving you any advice on how to treat your type 1 diabetes with diet.
Yeah. Yeah,
just to throw an example out there. Like, go to someone who's highly qualified in that area. Specialised in that area, and then go speak to them.
Mm.
So that's just a bit of pretext for this kind of conversation.
If it's something like a bit less serious than, say, a chronic disease and you don't know, you can always just go, oh, I'm not sure, but I will research it and then tell you what I find.
Definitely, yeah.
That's one of the other things that I think is really showing someone's intelligence is the ability to not just say they don't know, but then come back another time having researched it properly.
Yeah, intelligence and passion. I think it's a good blend that if they did that, it's a good blend of intelligence and passion that they've shown there. So for a lot of these following myths, you may disagree with. So as always, we want to encourage people to have healthy discussions in the comments.
Yep.
I mean healthy, I don't want anyone just screaming at each other, making ad hominem attacks. We want constructive criticism and constructive conversation about these topics. So let's create a conversation, essentially, in the comment section. Anyway, with that out of the road, a lot of these are bad explanations, for the most part, good recommendations. So let me just summarize that up real quick. I'll just give an example anyway. Most of these are centered around increasing your fruit and vegetable intake. So the first myth we're going to dive into is detox. Most of that is trying to encourage you to increase your fruit and vegetable intake as some means to detoxify yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously some pretty black and white ones that are bad, like the one we saw today, which was drinking charcoal. We know that's not going to be very good. That's done for people who have way too much iron in the blood. It's called iron chelation, and so it gets rid of your iron, so it's essentially stripping the minerals from your body.
It's not the best form of detox.
No, and so there's obviously some bits that are just bad explanations and just totally bad recommendations, but I'm saying for the most part, I can't put a percentage on it, but for a lot of these, and I will say when it is a good recommendation but it's got a bad explanation behind it, I will say that.
Good end result, bad reasoning.
Yeah. And like I said, most of that's because they're encouraging you to increase your fruit and vegetable intake. And I know you sound like your middle-aged mother when I say that, but it's so true. Like, there's a statistic from the World Health Organization, I can't think of it right now, but how many lives, how many hundreds of thousands, I think it might even be in the millions, of lives will be saved a year if you just increase your fruit and vegetable intake by like three serves.
Yeah, it's mental.
It's crazy. Like, just three serves.
I think you showed me that stat. I remember being pretty blown away by it. I can't remember it either.
Like a serve of fruit and like a cup of frozen veg or something like that. That's all it takes for you to save hundreds of thousands or millions, whatever the stat is. To save a lot of lives anyway. So let's jump into detox. So I think a very important distinction here to make straight from the start is, what are you even talking about? So, I know that sounds bad, but I actually mean, what are you talking about? What toxins are you talking about?
Yeah.
There's so many, and it comes under the rainbow, because you could be saying detox and you could be using it in a fairly appropriate manner. So if you're talking about antioxidants and free radicals, I always plug in these, so make sure you check out our social media, because we covered this, antioxidants and free radicals. Essentially, what free radicals are is they are unstable atoms that will steal electrons from other molecules, and essentially that just damages them, and because of that damage it leads to chronic disease like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, so a lot of different diseases
The big ones pretty much,
even cancers as well. What antioxidants do,
especially cancers, isn't it, because of the genetic
factor? As Jack said, it actually damages your DNA because it's stealing those electrons from your DNA makeup. So what antioxidants do is they're there to just say to that free radical, yo, chill out. Like, they're there to give them that electron.
Yeah. Help out.
So that's what they're there for. Yeah, they're charitable. They're like, just chill, dude. Have a Snickers.
You'll be fine.
They're the dude that handles their friend the Snickers in the ad, pretty much. So if you're talking about a detox in that regard, then that's legit. That's legitimate. Then you are, in fact, in a cringe when I say, you are detoxing. So you can increase the amount of antioxidants you have fighting those free radicals if you increase your intake, obviously, through food, through colourful vegetables and colourful fruits. But you do have an endogenous antioxidant system, defence system in your body that does that too. So yeah, your body's detoxing, but you also can encourage that detoxing if you increase your antioxidant intake. Yeah. And that sounds so cringy because the word detox is associated with pseudoscience now.
Yeah. In the medical most people mean
yeah,
when
I wouldn't say
detox.
That. I would never use that. I'm really giving it the benefit of the doubt here. I would never say that because for the most part, it's not talking about antioxidants neutralizing free radicals, is it? It's talking about, oh, I'm feeling bad. I need a detox.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get the juicer out and do a juice cleanse. Or maybe I'll get the charcoal drink out,
dirty lemonade
out and scald that. Or maybe I'll get that colonic irrigation to wash out all of my beneficial bacteria out of my rectum. Literally bull crap.
Probably human crap.
I'm keeping that in.
Yeah, that's fine.
But although it is seen as like pseudoscience in medical communities, and it's definitely without a doubt now seen as that in medical communities, it's still a broadly accepted rhetoric in society.
Yeah,
it's very broadly accepted, and you know people are like, oh yeah, after this weekend, I'm definitely going to need a detox. Your body's going to mostly do it for you. And what are you actually? Yeah, that's the main issue. What are you speaking about when you say detox? Because it's now the word is associated with people just thinking that they're going to do a juice cleanse and make themselves feel better.
Fasting for like a day and that makes all everything flush out and stuff like that.
It kind of goes with the people that say, like, listen to your body. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Like, definitely listen to your body. That's, whatever that means, it's quite ambiguous. But the people, when they say that, will be like, oh, I don't go get blood tests. I just go and see how I feel, how I feel. You could be severely iron deficient and still be feeling fine. It definitely happens. It's few and far between, but it definitely happens. So don't just listen to your body and just go off that. You do need some pretty hard data there sometimes as well, especially when you're thinking about things like iron and really important minerals and things like that. So it's almost like an extension of that listen to your body thing with the detox. I think people are like, oh yeah, I just feel like a detox. It's just like, no.
Yeah. That's especially relevant with most chronic diseases, right? Because a lot of the time you don't know that you're, say, forming or developing a chronic disease until it starts getting serious.
Yeah, exactly.
When prior to that, it might have been treatable and preventable.
Yeah, yeah.
But then by the time you find out about it, it's essentially going to be around for the rest of your life.
Yeah, definitely. One of the best examples there would be like cardiovascular disease, number one killer on the planet. Until you have that heart attack, you'd be feeling fine. And even if you knew you had atherosclerotic plaque building up in your arteries and it was actually blocking him up and was just ready to have that burst in which that burst of cholesterol would really clog it and then obviously start the heart attack, you might be feeling incredibly fine. You even may know that fact and be like, nah, I don't need to reduce my saturated fat intake, I'm feeling fine. You would never do that. You'd only ever do that if you were seriously misguided and were just asking for a heart attack, essentially.
I'm listening to my body. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, that was a bit of angina. To summarise this bit, there is an element of truth to it, being that...
Very, very small nugget of truth.
Yeah, exactly right. You can, in fact, detox, and you may even be able to implement some things to detox, but when people are speaking about detoxing, that's not what they mean. Yeah. They're not talking about the example that we used being antioxidants, free radicals. They're not talking about that. They're just talking about making themselves feel better under the detox rainbow or whatever they're on about. So it's a very case-by-case basis too. And that's something I always push, case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? That's a good segue into something else, which is a pretty big myth. That's pretty much just the diet that you'd go on if you were doing a long-term detox, and that's the alkaline diet.
Quote unquote.
We spoke a bit about this in pseudoscience. We even spoke a bit about detox, I realised, but we're just getting a bit more in depth now.
Yeah.
The alkaline diet is just essentially when you are trying to make your blood alkaline and not acidic. And now, if you've got just a very surface level understanding of biochemistry, you just know that's just not
If you've done year 10, maybe year 9 biology, and you've heard of homeostasis.
Yeah, exactly right. So you're just, I'll just explain what the alkaline diet is a bit more. So it predominantly focuses on fruits and vegetables. Yet again, bad explanation for a good recommendation. That's something I forgot to mention in the detox, it's a prime example of that. I mean, people are going to, after a big weekend, they're going to be eating like fruits and vegetables in order to detox.
I'm like, whoa, it's a good thing to do. Better, I must have detoxed.
Exactly right. Perfect example.
And on this good recommendation. I've been eating more fruit and veg. I must have alkalized
my blood.
Alkalized my blood.
Yeah. My body's fighting off all the disease.
My body's a temple.
Yeah, my body's a temple. My body's an alkaline temple. Mm. There's a doctor, I don't know his name, but he's pretty much just spouted this and started this myth. He was the one that came out and said diseases can only manifest in an acidic environment. An acidic environment being acidic blood. Don't know anything about the pH scale. It's just essentially anything that's above 7 is alkaline. Anything that's below 7 is acidic. And what pH is essentially just a measure of the amount of hydrogen ions that's present in the solution. Getting a bit sciencey there, but that's what pH is and what alkaline and acidic is in reference to that. So the alkaline diet, in theory, is supposed to put your blood pH into that alkaline area. I've even heard people say the more alkaline, the better. In that case, have a transfusion with bleach.
Oh God, I was wondering.
Yeah.
I was like, should I say drink some bleach? Or
yeah, well, it's true. And we did a meme on it.
I'll pop it up
now if I remember in the editing. If you want to focus on the most alkaline foods, then you'd probably want bleach at the top of your pyramid. Soap, yep.
Shampoo.
Any surfactants that, yeah, highly alkaline, then definitely just get them down you. Don't actually. That was a
grease cleaners, anything like that, just have a sip. Don't have a sip, please.
So yeah, it's quite funny.
Maybe banned on Spotify for telling people to drink bleach.
Yeah, we get, yeah.
That was satire.
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 We're explaining the satire, so it's no longer satire. So, yet again, an element of truth of this. There are foods that they tell you not to eat that do increase the acidity of your urine. For example, meat. Mm. They tell you to stop eating meat. That's a good thing, mostly for ethical reasons. Bit of health in there.
Partially for health reasons, yeah.
Partially for health reasons and tremendously for environmental reasons too.
Yeah.
And it's going to increase the acidity of your urine, but it's not going to increase the acidity of your blood. And that's what they correlate. They correlate the urine pH with your blood pH. They're totally two independent factors. Yeah. So your blood pH is kept in a very tight control. As Jack said before, that's just homeostasis.
Yeah.
It's kept in a very tight pH range, and that's where it'll stay in.
Yeah.
Unless you've got untreated type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, or anything else that's causing you to create way more acid or too little acid in your body. Yeah. And there's actually three ways your body does this. I won't go into them now, but there's three mechanisms in which your body tightly regulates your pH. You might have even heard of one, actually. It's hyperventilation. That fairly quickly summarizes the alkaline diet. Really good recommendation with a really bad explanation.
Yeah, it's quite prominent in the vegan sphere.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's a good recommendation.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially a vegan diet.
Mm.
It's almost synonymous with a vegan diet. All the recommendations that are in the alkaline diet are vegan diet, including dairy. I think there's some things in there that it goes a bit further with, like wheat. It tells you to cut out wheat because that's acid forming and all the rest. So it'll tell you to cut out wheat as well. So it's essentially like a gluten-free vegan diet.
Yeah.
That's what the alkaline diet is. That's why it's popular in vegan spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
With that out of the road, we'll move on to one of my favourites, and one of my favourites to absolutely decimate, and that's carbs that make you fat.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you must have heard this one?
A few.
A few?
A few times.
Oh, a good few thousand?
A good few.
Yeah. Pretty self-explanatory. Carbohydrates are macronutrients. When you consume those, they will make you fat.
Which is true if you're having a shitload.
If you eat 1,000 grams of carbohydrates, maybe it will get stored as fat.
A lot of it. I ate 1,000 grams of carbs a day and I got fat, so therefore carbs make you fat. Prove me wrong.
Debunked. The debunker of the myth has been debunked. So I always say this, with weight loss, the central principle is calorie intake versus calorie expenditure. So it's calories in, calories out. It's pretty much what it is. I know it's not as simple as that. I know there are many studies going into people having controlled diets with the exact same amount of energy, so the exact same amount of calories, just eating and focusing on different foods, and they end up coming out with different results in terms of weight loss. But overall calorie intake versus calorie expenditure is the central principle.
Yeah.
So don't demonize a macronutrient that's gonna make you fat. So with the carbohydrate one, it's even less true. If you're gonna say a macronutrient makes you fat, it's gonna be fat.
Yeah.
The macronutrient.
That seems to make some sort of sense.
Yeah. And it's because fat that you eat does get stored as fat on your body. I know some people might not agree with that, but it's the pure biochemistry. It that's what it's mainly meant to do. You do use fatty acids at resting, so you will use a lot of that.
Mm.
But that's the main pathway, is to get stored straight into adipose tissue. Whereas glucose, carbohydrates, isn't. It's to go into your muscles, you know, your muscle glycogen. So that's for use for your muscles, obviously. And then you've also got like 400, 500 grams of liver storage of glycogen. Glycogen, sorry, is just stored version of the carbohydrate. So when your body stores it. Then if you go over excess, then you will store it as fat, and that's called de novo lipogenesis. And it's a really, it's a high energy pathway, so it's not preferred at all.
Yeah.
So it requires a lot of energy from your body to turn it into fat. Yeah. So it won't do it unless it really needs to.
Yeah.
So unless you're really over consuming. Whereas fat, it's high calorie density too. So it's 9 calories per gram or 37 kilojoules per gram if you're working from the proper Australian units, the SI units. And that's double carbohydrates, over double carbohydrates, and over double protein. Protein's a bit out of the question because it can't be stored. And it's called the double effect of fat. I forgot what it's called. I was trying to explain this to a client the other day. I just called it the double whammy effect of fat because I couldn't remember the name. It's actually got a name. But it's the fact that it's high calorie density. It's also low thermic effect.
Yeah.
And so low thermic effect is essentially just the amount of heat that will be produced as a result of using that nutrient, so metabolizing that nutrient. So for fat, it's 2%.
Yeah.
So it's very energy efficient because not a lot gets turned into heat when you use it at all. Protein and fat have a much higher thermic effect of food, TEF it's called. Whereas fat is 2%, so you've got 98% now that's not being burnt as body heat. So that's the double whammy of fat. So if it's going to be any macronutrient, it's going to be fat that makes you fat. But yet again, that's not the case anyway. It's overall calorie intake. Mm. Your body's very, very intelligent when it comes to efficiently using the fuels that it's got. That's why we can go into ketosis and still do all right.
Yeah.
I'm going to say all right. And that's coming later, by the way. Bit of foreshadowing there. And I'll just add, carbohydrates are super important for physiological function. So where it comes to energy production, fitness performance, and replacing glycogen after a workout because you've depleted glycogen stores in your muscles, probably even a bit from your liver, you never know. It depends how hard you worked out. And you need to replace that glycogen with sugar and with carbohydrates and food. Simple as that. So, debunked.
Myth busted. My
favourite one. Do you like this one?
My favourite one. I like hearing you rant about this.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite ones. It's soy. Just the word soy can make some people cringe and curl up into a ball and
for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's just come up again. We spoke about this on the Pseudoscience podcast, I think.
Yeah.
It's coming up again because of Paul Joseph Watson. He kind of got the myth going again by bringing up this thing called Soy Boy. And so he labels anyone that drinks soy and acts remotely feminine, a soy boy. And so he's made that correlation with soy and femininity, and that's pretty much where it's come from. The rhetoric is that it just decreases your testosterone and increases your estrogen. So if you think about testosterone as the male hormone,
yeah,
and estrogen as the female hormone, then you can kind of see where the feminine effects of soy come from. And the rationale behind that is soy has things called isoflavones in, and they act as phytoestrogens. And you may have heard me say phytoestrogens then. Might prick up your ears and go, estrogen.
That sounds like estrogen.
Yeah.
But what does phyto mean? Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's estrogen. Phyto means plant, so it's plant estrogen. It means it acts like estrogen in a plant.
Are humans plants?
No.
Oh.
You kind of answered the question.
Well, there goes that myth.
Yeah. Although that's mainly good to use, there are some sources of phytoestrogens that kind of do have an effect. So there's like hops in beer. So that actually has had a pretty substantial effect. Yeah. So hops have got phytoestrogens, but they're so much more potent, and they actually bind onto a different receptor, which actually makes them have a bit more of a feminizing effect, which is why I try and avoid beer as much as I can. But with soy isoflavones, there's not many in there. The studies that have been done and have shown that it's increased estrogen have been case studies where they've been having like 10 times Asian populations. And Asian populations eat loads, so they must be eating like a truckload.
Yeah, you told me about that one boy.
Yeah, the 19-year-old type 1 diabetic. He was otherwise healthy and was eating like, it's like a block of meal or something ridiculous. It was insane amount. And he was having soy protein as well, soy protein shakes, which have it was like ultra concentrated and nice flavours.
It was a certain amount of kilograms of something
yeah,
a day he
probably
was having.
Tofu, yeah, probably told you.
Blew my mind how much he was having.
So much. That's all they've got. They've only got case studies in the literature. And you compare these to the systematic reviews that have been done, especially in Asian populations where they eat a lot of tofu, especially men. No, nothing. In fact, it may even it may even increase your testosterone. Some studies have actually shown that. I doubt it. I don't think it was statistically significant, but funny that. So that's one of them, and that's a myth. So that one's busted. But there's another one, which is about hyperthyroidism. So, or just altering your thyroid function.
I'm not so familiar with this one.
Yeah, so there is an element of truth in this one as well. So there's an element of truth in that phytoestrogen one. I would say this one's a bit bigger of an element of truth. So it does interfere with your iodine uptake.
Yeah.
And so iodine and your thyroid are obviously very interrelated. And one of my concerns is that vegans don't get a lot of iodine in their diet.
Yeah.
So this is specifically aimed at vegans here, because they don't have like iodized salts, and that's why I always try and get people onto adding iodized salt to their meals instead of just normal salt. Or no salt, like some people do, for whatever reason. Like no salt, I mean like no sodium. So that's why I try and get people onto having the iodine, because then having like soy products and then not having any iodized salt or anything.
Mm.
And so they're decreasing the iodine that they're getting, which is not much anyway. So it only decreases it a bit. I can't put a number on it yet again, but it's very minor. And it doesn't alter your thyroid function itself. And people with hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism can have it as well. There's a myth going around that they can't have it and they should avoid it at all costs. Just be a bit more careful about it. Make sure you're getting enough iodine and just make sure you're not going overboard. It's pretty simple. It's just moderation.
Yeah.
And even then it's...
Basic principle in nutrition pretty much.
Yeah. And even then they should be eating it because of the benefits that it proposes. And that's what I'm going to go into now, is the benefits of this food. It's actually a really, really beneficial food.
Mm.
Not only being packed with really good nutrients like protein, if it's tofu that's been fortified with like calcium, that's been made calcium carbonate, it's got a lot of calcium, it's got a lot of iron, it's got a really powerful antioxidant effect. Those phytoestrogens that we spoke about, the isoflavones, they have a really powerful antioxidant effect. We spoke about antioxidants in the detox section just before. Really powerful. They also prefer like... they've been linked with decreased rates of breast cancer, prostate cancer, colorectal cancer, CVD markers, so cardiovascular disease markers, so decreased LDL cholesterol, increased HDL, decrease in total LDL cholesterol. LDL is the bad cholesterol, which is the main one, so it's decreasing your LDL cholesterol, which is a good thing. So it's so much convincing research, but yet what's getting in the way is these stupid myths that are based on correlation, but like petty correlation things like Paul Joseph Watson did, petty correlation arguments, and also very weak case studies. So I would say that one's pretty busted, hey?
Yep, happily a soy boy.
Happily a soy boy, you know. I'm going to leave it there with my myth busting.
Yep.
I think there was three there, or four. Was there four there?
Three, I believe.
Detox, alkaline. Oh, we can check here now.
Oh.
There was four. I've just covered four, and I've left room for a fifth one, and I'm going to use up my AMA components for this one. So the Ask Us Anything, we just call it AMA, because it's commonly known as Ask Me Anything. So if you don't know, every week before we do this podcast, we put a call out for questions. So it's a really good opportunity for us to interact with you, the audience, so you can put in your questions and ask us anything about the topic that we'll be doing.
Ask us anything you like.
Yep. Anything. Even if it's not about the topic, we'll probably get around to answering it. So we've got a few AMAs for mine today, and I was really happy about that. Most of them had, I think we've got three today. There are three different people with, like, I don't know, five questions. Yep. So I'll try and get through them really quick. So the first one is keto and minimal carbs. It's actually what my opinions on ketogenic diet and just focusing on minimal carbohydrates, and also the paleo diet, because that's in there a bit as well.
So you kind of covered the minimal carbs thing before, but imagine there's more to say on it.
So I don't... This is going to touch on... All right, so another question that we got as well was high-carb diet. You do have to do high-carb, low-fat, especially in relation to a vegan diet.
Yeah.
So with these low-carb, high-carb, all that kind of stuff, I don't really care. It's best to focus on just a well-balanced diet that fits best for you. Some people feel better on more carbohydrates. Some people feel better on a bit more fat. Especially females. Females a lot of the time do feel better on fat. And they're actually more efficient at using fat.
Yeah.
Especially with training and resistance exercise. There's some really good research there. It makes sense. You know, females do have a higher proportion of body fat than males. So yeah, they're definitely going to need a bit more. So with that, I don't really like it because I think it's going to be fueling a bit of body image issues and some disordered eating around food and all the rest. It's not like veganism, which is ingrained in a philosophy, an ethical philosophy, which is why I don't have the same criticism towards a vegan diet, obviously. Yeah. It doesn't have that ethical principle behind it. So with ketogenic diet, essentially, and minimal carbs, you're just lowering your carbs as low as you can and going into ketosis. Won't go into the details there, but essentially your body's running off of fat. The rationale behind it, even now, it just doesn't really make that much sense.
Mm.
Your body runs on glucose. It's most optimized for running on glucose. So is your brain. And you can run on ketones.
I think it's the idea that if you don't have that glucose, then your body's going to use the fat instead.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, but that's...
Eating the fat as just, well, then yeah, not really, there's no negative there, it's just going to be a negative.
Yeah, you're just... All you're doing is this, and how does that make sense? And then doing this, there's a lot of research to show that ketogenic diets are actually very harmful. So there's a pretty big meta-analysis done, and I think it was a 20% increased risk of all-cause mortality, so all causes of diet-related disease, death, 20%... Not, I know you always say that. Diet related disease death, 20% increase from a ketogenic diet. So that's.
Which is it, like 20%, it doesn't sound like too much, but it's nothing to scoff at, really.
No, it's.
Especially in relation to that small of a dietary change.
Yeah.
Just flipping around your carbs and your fats and there, you're 20% more likely to die.
Yeah, exactly right. It's crazy. I reckon a lot of that's to do with because you're increasing your sources of animal fat, saturated fat, and obviously that's just got such a clear direct link with cardiovascular disease, and that's the number one killer. So I'd say it's mostly fueling those diet related deaths via cardiovascular disease. So yeah, I wouldn't really recommend a minimal diet, a minimal carbohydrate or ketogenic diet to any of my clients personally. I've seen some pretty good research around epilepsy and ketogenic diets. But then I was speaking.
Yeah, that's quite interesting.
Yeah, because the brain running on ketones, it's just more effective. I don't really know, to be fair, but it's something to do with the brain running on ketones instead of glucose. That's just more efficient for people with epilepsy. I've got an epilepsy client now, and she went on a ketogenic diet. Low-carb diet, and it made it worse. So, yeah, again,
it's
down to the individual, and it's down to the type of epilepsy, I believe. So that type of epilepsy wouldn't make sense to do it, especially if it's maybe underactivity or something like that. I don't know enough about it. Yeah, again, I'm not going to comment. Paleo diet is slightly different, though. It's more restricting your eating to what's... Because paleos don't even do this right. you should be restricting your eating to like a 100-kilometer radius or something like that. Where you was
if that.
If you're really a true paleo, that's what you should be doing. Because it's essentially living like a hunter-gatherer, right? So you need to hunter-gather from like a 50-kilometer radius from where you are. Because that's what they do back in the day. And that's what you're doing. You're mimicking the diet of a paleolithic person. And they live till they're 40 years old. Do you really need to say any more than that? People, you're mimicking the diet of people who live to 40 years old. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It's like going, well, back in the day, we didn't use any kind of painkillers or anything like that when we'd had surgery, so why do we do that now? It's just, you know, obviously they were medical professionals and dietitians.
Yeah, exactly right.
They unlocked it really quickly and we messed it up.
I know, modern day medicine's done nothing for us, especially in the nutrition department. Mm.
That's why our lifespan keeps going up, goddammit.
I know, that pesky lifespan keeps climbing up. It's cutting out a lot of grains, whole grains, and beans even, and a lot of other things, soy as well, soy. So it's cutting out a lot of beneficial foods. It's just totally unnecessary. Yet again, this is why I said it's hard with the paleo diet because it's not exactly the same, because you can do, like, for example, a higher carb paleo diet. I've seen it be done before.
Yeah, you can do it in a healthy manner.
You can do it in a healthy manner.
It's harder and much more pointless.
Yeah, it's just pointless. Yet again, it's fueling that disordered eating behaviour that we just don't need. There's no point why you should do it. You can do it healthily, but why are you doing it?
Have you seen the thing with early onset osteoporosis?
Oh, okay.
In girls specifically on the paleo diet?
No.
I've not seen that. I saw it a little while ago, but...
Because they're cutting out like dairy or something.
More or less.
It's not replacing it with anything. Not replacing it with any fortified soy milk. That's why I always encourage vegans to get on a fortified soy milk or almond milk or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's horrible. That's horrible to hear. There's been some horrible evidence come out like that. A lot of the benefits that do come from a paleo diet is a result of eliminating processed food.
Yeah.
Yet again, bad explanation, good recommendation. So let's probably leave that one there. I do want to do a video on a bit more in depth of ketogenic and low carb diets, just so I've got the full evidence equipped there. It's very hard to obviously make arguments off the cuff and camera not fully equipped with the evidence and not be able to have a script in front of me. I want to do that because I feel as though it's important and they come back now and then. Like,
definitely.
I think we're in a period now where we're coming down the curve a bit, but it always comes up again. You know, keto comes up again, paleo dies down, paleo comes up, paleo dies down. So I'd like to do a good video on that. Other question is, are you finding it hard to find credible information in the area of health with everyone becoming a dietitian?
Quote unquote.
Yeah, I think you used the word dietitian wrong there. So a dietitian is actually qualified under the Australian Allied Health Professionals Association, AHPRA. So they're... Not everyone's a dietitian. I think what this person means, who made this comment, was probably a nutritionist or...
Anyone can nutritional be, a, expert. Be a nutrition and, yeah. and uncredited.
Yeah, exactly right. I think that's probably what it meant.
Unlicensed, or just everyone. Sorry.
Unlicensed. Yeah, unlicensed. And I think he probably meant just people being on Instagram and Facebook showing off
smoothie bowls.
Yeah, making claims on the internet and stuff like that. And that's just the uprise of digital health, essentially. And we're going to be doing a whole podcast on digital health coming up fairly soon, don't know when. So a lot more will be in that than what we'll say now. But short answer is yes. Not as hard for me, but definitely hard for the general public.
Yeah.
I'd hate to be the layperson right now in this area because it's so hard to actually get a clear answer out of anyone. No one wants to admit that the research is mixed, even though that can be frustrating for people. But it's even more frustrating for people to hear that it's so much this way, like keto, like go keto, don't have any carbs. And so far this way, go high carb, eat as many carbs as you want and you won't get fat. And eat as, like, over Durian Rider advise, even though he's an extreme athlete. He does thousands of kilometers of cycling and he has like 4,000 grams, mostly from like carbohydrates a day. Won't go over him too much, but we've got two such extreme ends of the spectrum. Must be so confusing.
No one meets in the middle.
And that's what we aim to do a lot of the time. And And we're not afraid to admit that there's conflicting evidence, or we don't know, or that still needs to be more evidence come out.
It's pretty crazy to think about how such a fundamental part of just being a human day to day is one of the most mysterious aspects of health.
Yeah.
Like nutrition. By now, you'd think we should know what we should eat.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's so true.
Thousands of years of science, and we still don't know whether to eat a banana or an egg.
Yeah, that is quite simply what it is, isn't it? But yeah, it's just the humility and the admission of not knowing, or the admission of that it's not so clear yet, or why is that so hard to say?
Mm.
So I think that's one thing that a lot of these people on the digital health kind of platform aren't doing. So for me, with a bit more of like the critical thinking skills, without sounding too big-headed, behind me with like university education and all the rest, it helps a lot to filter through the crap and find the good. I can know for the layperson it's not going to be hard, and that's kind of what we want to do.
Yeah.
We want to filter that through that crap for you and deliver it in a way that you'll understand. And please let us know if we're not doing that, or if we are doing it, or whatever. The next questions, I think that's pretty good wrap-up of that one, unless you want to add anything there.
No.
We've got, it's on our Instagram, I'm just going to check now, sorry. It just came through just before we started. We've got carbs make you fat, just through before, I didn't see that before. We've already covered that, that's done. And the other one was detox, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we've covered that as well, so
perfect.
Bang on the head. The other ones that we haven't, was there a soy one in there as well?
We had soy gives you cancer and all fats are bad.
Oh, okay, I'll just touch on soy gives you cancer a tiny bit, because I didn't really touch on that too much. I touched on preventative. Yeah, there is some myths out there that it gives you cancer as well, which is weird, because all of the evidence points towards the complete opposite.
Yeah,
it's actually protective. Yeah, again, I'm going to admit that it's not that clear yet. We don't know. I'm not saying it prevents breast cancer definitively. I'm saying there's a lot of good evidence.
It's mounting up to...
Yeah, to show that. And especially prostate cancer as well. Colorectal cancer. And I think the breast and the prostate cancer there is because it's very hormone-related
that's what I was
mechanism.
About to ask.
Yeah, it's a hormone-related mechanism of action in which it's actually preventing the cancer from growing or proliferating or even starting. I reckon that's why the preventive effects come in there from soy.
Yeah.
So the isoflavones, which are said to be bad, are actually the good aspect.
Yeah.
The good guy.
Hell yeah.
So that's that out of the way.
And the last one, are all fats bad?
Oh, all fats bad. Yeah, I did. I wasn't trying to demonise fats before, by the way. Twice I had the opportunity to demonise fats then with a ketogenic diet. And also when I was speaking about carbs making fat, and I said, if anything's going to make you more fat, it's going to be fats. Wasn't demonising fats there. Fats are incredibly important, like I said, especially for females to get them in because of the high body fat percentage and the fact that they are more efficient on average at using fats for fuel. There are good fats and there are bad fats. I know people don't like... I still don't like saying that good, bad, healthy, unhealthy.
There are better amounts of fat and worse amounts of fat.
Yeah, exactly right. Whereas like trans fat, there's no good amount of trans fat to have.
Yeah.
So there are a few things that are just... quite cut and dry, like trans fat, you just want to eliminate totally.
Yeah.
There's decrease in HDL cholesterol, the good cholesterol, and an increase in LDL cholesterol.
Do you want to quickly mention what trans fat is?
Trans fat is, when you hear polyunsaturated, monounsaturated, saturated, trans fat, omega-6, omega-3, these are all words used to describe the chemical structure and how they're made up as a chemical. So without going too much into detail there, about the structure of these things, they got the names there. That's what trans means. So trans just essentially means that the structure is flipped, yeah. And what flips that structure is mainly cooking.
Mm.
So in baked goods, you'll find trans fat, and a lot of the time it comes from fried chips, from a chippy, something like that. That's because they've got polyunsaturated and monounsaturated oils, like vegetable oil, that's been heated, cooled, however many days. I think it's after like 3 days, which is why they advise you to change your oil after like 3 days. I know, shock horror, you might be having a 3 day old oil on your chips. I've seen it often though in the hospitality industry. That's why they say after 3 days it gets really bad, because then the trans fat just goes through the roof after being heated and cooled so many times. So there's no good amount of trans fats really that you can have, and it's pretty much the same for saturated fat. There's such a clear link there with cardiovascular disease that we should be minimizing saturated fats as much as possible. Luckily, on a vegan diet, that's really easy, which is why we do see the cardio protective effects of a vegan diet. I won't go too into much depth there. But the good fats that you should be maximizing are your polyunsaturated and your monounsaturated fats. And then within your polyunsaturated fats, you've got omega-3 and omega-6. Yeah, again, try not to go into much detail. Omega-3 is your anti-inflammatory omega, and your omega-6 is your pro-inflammatory omega. That's not a bad thing. Pro-inflammation is a good thing, and it's essential for your body. You just don't want too much.
Yeah.
And in society, we are getting too much from the diet, because omega-6, just like trans fats, are from fried foods a lot as well. They're also from a lot of good sources, like I think avocado's got quite a lot of omega-6 in.
Yeah.
So it's good. You need it. It's an essential fatty acid. Omega-6 and omega-3 are essential fatty acids. You need them in your diet. It's just that our ratio is a bit off.
Yeah.
We're getting way too much omega-6 and not enough omega-3. So focusing on omega-3 foods, like plant foods here, linseed, walnuts, chia seeds, focusing on those type of foods, having those in every day, just get a good dose in, and it will make your ratio a lot more even and a lot better. And there is some really interesting research around omega 6 to 3 ratio and how that relates to the progression of disease and how that goes. So yeah, there are good and bad fats if you want to label them good and bad.
but yeah, not all fats are bad.
Not all fats are bad. That was the question, wasn't it? Are all fats? Yeah, definitely not. And I think attached on that question, there was the thing about the high carbohydrate.
High carb, low fat.
Yeah, so the attached to that question was, is a high carb diet the only way to go? And it's not true. Like I said, a lot of people who go on a high carb diet will actually go really low on the fat. Like the 80-10-10, have you heard of that before?
Yeah.
80-10-10. 80-10-10 meaning 80% of your calories coming from carbs, 10% coming from fat, 10% coming from protein. I would say that's way too low for both protein and fat.
Yeah.
It should be much higher for both of them. Especially fat. Like fat, if you go below 10%, WHO's hard limit for minimal fat is 10% from calories. I never go lower than 15. Try to never go lower than 15. My female clients, I usually leave it at 20.
Yeah.
For people who are trying to lose body fat, because it is a lot easier to make a meal plan, lower fat and a bit higher carb, but not high carb. Like high carb meaning like 70%. I don't know what I'd say. Maybe 65 or 60 above. Yeah. 60% or above.
70 somewhere in there maybe.
I'd probably agree with you there with that. With that's classified as a high carb diet. I don't think I've had anyone on a high carb diet before. Yeah. It's just not necessary.
50 to 60 is usually.
Yeah, so the AMDR. 45 to AMDR 60 just means acceptable macronutrient distribution range. It's a mouthful. But it's what the Australian government has, and I think it's the same as the WHO, the World Health Organization's acceptable range. So you'd just be aiming for that range. And carbohydrate is 45 to 60.
Oh, that's what I just said. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so good at this.
I think you said 50 to 60, but...
Yeah, I then changed that.
Yeah, so 45. So yeah, it's around there. And protein somewhere like around 15 to 25. Fat is like 15 to 30, something like that. Yeah, again, I'm definitely sure about the carbohydrate though. Somewhere around there though. And I stick to the AMDR pretty spot on every time with my meal plan clients, so... Yep, fat's not bad. Not all fats are bad. Carbs aren't bad. None of the macronutrients are bad. Just eat them in good amounts, not sensible amounts. And don't start getting weird about food. Don't start getting weird about food. That's one of the best pieces of advice I can give. It sounds weird. Just don't get weird about eating food and treating different foods differently and labeling foods as unhealthy, good, bad, healthy. It's just not good for your psychology around eating, and it's not going to help you in the long run. So I'll leave you with that little nugget there. So, sorry you haven't spoke much, Jack.
I was going to say, this has been the Ben Show, the Ben Nutrition Show.
Yeah, just like last time, it was the fitness show. We hope you enjoy this episode of Dreams, Moons, Veggie Supremes. Make sure you conjure up a bit of discussion in the comments about any of the things that we spoke about.
Keeping it nice and civil.
Yes, keep it nice and civil. Really good advice there, Jack. Maybe bring up some nutrition myths that you maybe think we missed, or you want to maybe see us discuss in the next Nutrition Myths podcast.
Or any kind of diet we've discussed that you want to try and defend.
Definitely. Got any ketoers out there? Leave your comments below and maybe try and convince us of your position.
Yeah.
We're open-minded, so that will probably wrap it up there, guys. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you on the next one.